There is no better place.
It's time to talk.
The only way to get anything done in Cork is down to the Neil
Prendeville.
Right, you know? Fair play. Talk to Neil
Prendeville. That's a Cork threat at this stage, I think.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I just love Cork people.
Conversation that matters.
Yes, the conversation does matter. Be part of it. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. I ask about people's favourite Easter eggs because they're chock full of Easter egg stories in the papers today. More about that in a few minutes then. But very seriously, I know that we talk a lot about road deaths and we talk a lot about, speed, and we talk a lot about drink or drug driving, and we talk an awful lot about people texting and holding mobile and all of that when it comes to driving. And then, of course, we see numbers of deaths on the road continuing to increase. The Examiner's front page today, deaths on roads may exceed 200 this year. The government has admitted that at least 40 more people could die, if you follow the statistical evidence, 40 more on our roads this year than last year. Now, we are still, I was going through the stats on air last week. I don't have them to hand, but if you go way back to the early 90s and you look at the road deaths on our roads, and we were talking about 350, 400 per annum. We're not at that level anymore, thank God. But, you know, still, wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if it continued to drop as opposed to what looks like this year, an increase on last year. And, of course, the tragic loss of a mammy and two children, and dad having to come back from Ethiopia now to bury his family. It's awfully sad. Dad's crash agony, his family all killed. Front page making the Sun today. Loving smiles together forever is the front in the Mirror. Mum and two daughters killed in that horrific crash were named last night. Their heartbroken dad is making his way home from abroad. It was Una Bowden, 47-year-old mam, died instantly. Kira at 14 and 9-year-old Saoirse. Their car collided with a lorry near Castle Claremorris in County Mayo. It's awfully, awfully sad, and they carry photographs of smiling mum and two daughters on the front of the papers today. And it just, oh, I mean, it's hard to believe. It really and truly is. It's all so often now we're hearing these stories, and they're becoming way too normalised to see on the front pages or talked about on radio stations. In other stories here on Leaside, a couple of interesting court reports for you. One has to do with, imagine this, young woman walks into her bedroom in the early hours in the morning to find a fella hiding behind the door. I mean, just think about that. It's a court report from the Echo. Liam Healan says that a young woman was terrified, to say the least, walked into her bedroom in the early hours of the morning, find a man she'd never seen before hiding behind the door. It was a case of a 30-year-old man called Thado Malanga, who pleaded guilty to burglary charge. The guards gave evidence in court yesterday. They had a report of an intruder at a house in Galabi Terrace. Young woman reported that she came home from work and the front door of the house was ajar. Now, she was sharing the home with other girls. She came into the home, saw that her bedroom light was on, entered the bedroom, and a male unknown to her was behind the bedroom door. What a fright she got. Shouted at him to get out, ran upstairs to her two housemates who were asleep. €100 in coins in a plastic container were taken from her room. And this was before the courts yesterday. Now, it's been adjourned. I thought there would have been sentencing, but it's adjourned now for a probation report to be prepared on the accused. He came from Botswana with his family, according to the courts, and had all of his schooling years here in Cork. There's another case. We have to wait for sentencing on that one. There is another case where the judge imposed a 10-week prison sentence but suspended it on condition that the person involved would engage with the probation services. Why do I mention that? But, well, it has to do with a member of An Garda Síochána who was verbally abused in Little Island, 49-year-old drunken man who declared, "I hope your daughter dies." This is the kind of nonsense, right? This is the kind of grief the guards have to put up with. I could go through other chapter and verse, but I need to stick to this court case involving a Mark Wolfe from Little Island before the courts. Guilty, pleaded guilty to charges, threatening or abusive words or behaviour, being intoxicated, he was a danger to himself and others. "I hope your daughter dies." Previous convictions, yeah, intoxication, possession of drugs. And before the courts yesterday, the judge said that she would impose a 10-week prison sentence, suspended on condition that he engages with the probation services. Apparently he goes out to visit his father's grave and has literally just been released from custody, but he continues He consumes a bottle of vodka, apparently, and that was the reason for the carry-on and what was said to the member from Garda Síochána. There are big changes planned with regards to asylum seekers, international protection order individuals coming into Ireland. Now, none of this kicks in until 2026. We need to line up, apparently, with the rest of Europe. The papers this morning are talking about committing to 7,000... Isn't it amazing when they can find beds? Isn't it just extraordinary? They find properties when they need them. 7,000 new beds for asylum seekers expected to be contracted within the next 18 months. The idea is to move away from hotels or move away from the private sector and get it themselves. I see the Examiner this morning saying that this revised plan to house asylum seekers will involve the state, taxpayers' money, purchasing turnkey properties, the likes of empty offices and things like that, and then do a rapid build and conversion of these properties to be used for refugees. They also, I suppose, will rapid build homes. Well, I don't suppose, I know they will. They'll rapid build homes as well in a bid to deliver 14,000 extra beds. I know people are screaming at the radio now, how can they do this and rapidly build properties and homes when they couldn't do it for those that are crying out, not just to get a council property, incidentally, but people who are crying out to buy their own properties too. So rapid builds, lads, bring it on, says you. The government has committed to increasing the number of state-owned accommodation for asylum seekers to 14,000 in the next 4 years. Because they need to stop relying on privately owned centres. This is all to do with up to 16,000 international protection applicants coming into Ireland this year and possibly every year if things don't change. So it's interesting then when you talk about international protection orders and how they need to be fast-tracked when they arrive here. And even these would be ones arriving without any passport or documentation. They will get on the plane, but they don't get off the plane with it. So fast-tracking in Ireland involves taking 3 months. So they're put aside in special accommodation for 3 months. There's nothing really new in this, is there? I mean, 3 months is not fast-track in my book. 3 weeks might be, but 3 months isn't. And then there is a three-month period. And if a decision is made then that they cannot stay, there's another 3 month period then before they actually have to leave the country. So it's a bit farcical when you look at it. And then we were talking yesterday on the air on the hate crime speech legislation that either will or won't. I think to some extent the impression I got yesterday is people are sick to death and fed up of being told what to do and what to think and where to go and how to feel. But Leo Varadkar never holds back on how he feels. He says that never has a political party has shown as much cowardice as Sinn Féin. Why does he say that? So much cowardice from a political party because of their U-turn on the support for the hate speech legislation. And so that's the story making the Mail today. We as a country then are going to join the likes of South Africa in taking a case of genocide against Israel. Ireland is to intervene in South Africa's genocide case against Israel at the top court in the United Nations. So we're on board. We're up for this, apparently. South Africa's taken a case against Israel at the International Court of Justice, accusing Israel of genocide in Gaza. And we're backing them. We're up for the case as well. It's like 30,000 people have been killed and 70,000 injured in the Gaza Strip alone since the Israeli military offensive. We know of the claims of genocide and certainly the very undisputable claims of famine and famine being used as a weapon. You know, we talk about, issues in Ireland and certainly the awful state of our health service, and it's been that way for such a long, 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 long time now. But there is a very sad story making the Star today involving taxi driver Martin Abbott. He was a 65-year-old man who was admitted to the University Hospital in Limerick back in 2019. He had fever, he had cough, and he had diarrhea. They had to have an inquest into his death. And would you believe that the inquest into his death showed that he was on a trolley. He was given antibiotics and put on a drip, and they were waiting for a bed. So he was placed in a trolley in an isolation cubicle. He was 3 days in there, and his daughter was minding him, and nurses were looking after him and things like that. And his daughter left them at 10 o'clock at night. And the following morning, it was found that he had died overnight. And he'd been found lying on the floor next to his trolley overnight. And the question needs to be asked as to, you know, was anybody checking in on him throughout the night? But they couldn't ventilate and they couldn't do anything because rigor mortis had set in even. He had been left dead for so long. It's awfully sad. He died from heart failure due to pneumonia on the ground of a hospital, and by the time they did get to him, rigor mortis had set in. For those of you that like to drive big motoring cars, particularly the big SUVs, it's going to get much more expensive for you because they're going to tax you more for the bigger cars. This is all to do, of course, with climate targets that are being imposed. Large vehicles, all your SUVs and things like that, and big engines, they're in the sights now of the Transport Minister, Eamon Ryan, according to the front page of the Mail today, because they really want, less and less road cars on a road. And you want everybody driving electric cars. Although I am told that sales of electric cars, while they haven't stalled, I am told that sales of electric cars have slowed way down. And to be honest, it would appear that petrol and diesel cars are still selling quite well. But so SUVs and big machines, also higher parking fees, taking up more on-street parking spaces, encouraging insurance companies to offer lower premiums to people who drive less. These are some of the strategies. Like this, there's over 35 actions being set out by the government now to reduce people driving in their motor cars. And they're just a few. Making it less attractive to drive, if you like. Front page story making the Mail today. And we were talking, and I'll have a chat tomorrow about the price of the pint, it being Good Friday. I mean, there is a religious connotation to Good Friday, but for all sorts of reasons, historical and cultural, there's also, because I'd love to share your stories with regards to trying to get a pint back in the day on Good Friday, but they're certainly getting dearer. And I'll talk tomorrow with Michael O'Donovan from the Castle Inn on the South Main Street about, you know, a lot of things, the price of the pint, the changing face of the Irish pub, and indeed issues involving the smoking ban, which will be 20 years in force. 20th anniversary will actually be tomorrow. So the price of the pint, he says, will put people, more people have already turned to home drinking and going out less, but every time the price of the pint goes up, he says, less and less people decide to go out. And pubs are struggling because of that, as well as, he says, the increase in the minimum wage, the mandatory sick days going up to 5 days that the employer has to pay, all of these things, a lot more besides. And we do know that Diageo is going to increase the price of a pint. The Echo carries it today 6 cents from next month. And remember, they also increased the pint by 12 cents February of last year. So one thing anyway you never see, and that is in Ireland, prices coming down. Unless you want to get involved in a bit of a side hustle, you know, way of making some extra cash on the side. There's a lovely article in The Sun today saying that pet sitting, imagine that. Going to somebody's house, sitting on your arse, drinking coffee, watching Netflix, and minding the dog and being paid for it. I mean, I do that all the time and I never make a bob for it. So it seems like a good side hustle to me for extra income. Other ones include buying and reselling stuff online. You can understand that. Some people are very handy at it. Other ways of making extra money include upcycling clothing. What's that? Like, how do you make, how does that work? Like, selling secondhand clothes, I guess. Becoming an influencer. To be honest with you, 99% of influencers and bloggers make no money at all. They might get free stuff, but there's very few of them make serious dosh. Other things then involve baking, selling baking, cleaning other people's homes, I suppose. These are the, you know, there's the top 10 of side hustles. But apparently, the average side hustle will give you a monthly income of just under €300 a month before deductions and tax. Although I doubt that there's much tax being paid on side hustles, would you? And then, as I was mentioning earlier on, lots of different stories regarding Easter. Just two for you today, more tomorrow. There was a doctor in the UK, according to the UK Times, who put up a bit of a warning online. He was kind of a doctor warning people not to eat your Easter eggs in one sitting. He had to take it down because of the online mockery and accusations from the public that he was engaging in a nanny state behaviour. And I suppose sometimes people just get being fed up of being lectured, you know. What is wrong with eating an Easter egg in one sitting? Very little or nothing, I would say. I mean, the problem is when you crack open the second or the third one. Well, that's where you're in trouble. But he went on to say it's not just the Easter eggs. People don't realise that an average Easter egg contains around 3/4 of... Oh, God, give me a goddamn break. Then he went on to say that, oh, yeah, but you know, sometimes it's not just the Easter eggs. People are eating cakes and biscuits. Yawn, yawn, yawn. All that extra sugar and calorie. Can one day, just one day, be sacred for people where they don't have to be lectured on what's good for them?
them.
I think I feel like Easter eggs is something, it's a rite of passage, isn't it? You have to learn it the hard way. Like, it doesn't matter how many times people tell you don't eat all the Easter eggs, there's going to come a day when you're about 8 or 9, you have the option to eat as much as in front of you, and you end up getting sick all over the place, and you've learned your lesson, and that's the last
thing. I'm not advocating the throwing
up. No, but I'm just saying, like, or you end
but
up with
a
really...
It's the kind of day when parents can say, there are no rules today regarding your Easter egg. Egg.
Single
go
egg.
For it, pal. Yeah. Take it out of the box. Don't take off the foil. Or bang it off the wall.
Or against
devour it.
Against my head was always a firm favourite for myself. Right off the noggin. And then you go. But I think, I just think as a kid, it's something that you have to learn yourself. You know, like, it doesn't matter how many times the adults tell you. It's not until, it's a bit like, you know, don't put your hand on the hob. You know, it's like, oh,
is that in a restaurant and they put down the plate and they say, be careful, the plate is red hot. What do I do?
Touch the plate.
I don't believe you.
No. Why do we do that? Like, why do we have it in our head that we know better than people who are literally... But yeah, I definitely think I wouldn't be endorsing it, but I definitely think as a kid you just have to, it's one of those things you have to learn the hard way.
I remember
one specific Yorkie egg that I had, and I devoured the thing immediately. And even now when I think of Easter, I think back to that Yorkie egg and the absolute cramps. That was the last time.
Also, we should be asking the question as well, maybe today and tomorrow, as to how many Easter eggs their boys and girls, or parents as well, but particularly sons and daughters, get. I can guarantee you it's a lot more than one or two.
I think the Easter Bunny's getting a lot more generous.
Yeah, and they've got so cheap as well, Easter eggs. Mind you, there is a story making the online editions this morning, where there's a shop in the UK they are selling Easter eggs, but for some extraordinary reason, I'm sounding like Victor Meldrew this morning, they don't call them Easter eggs. They call them gesture eggs. Why? Like, you don't even have to be religious, right? Or today being, you know, Holy Thursday and tomorrow Good Friday, the day that Jesus got nailed to the cross. If you're not even interested in any of that, surely be to God, even those that are atheists would agree, they're Easter eggs. So why would a shop call them gesture eggs? Apparently, Cadbury's know nothing about it, although they are big displays of Cadbury's dairy milk with the sign on it, gesture eggs, 2 for £10. I don't know, man, the world, sometimes I give up.
Call Neil now, 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And I was talking yesterday with the Waldy Barber, and we were talking about lots of different things about Blackpool and the amount of pubs that were there that are now gone. I got an interesting text from Yorick, who said to me there were over 30 pubs from the North Cathedral down to the Commons Road running all the way through Blackpool way back in the day. Over 30 pubs. There are very few now, and much of the interior of Blackpool itself without any pubs at all. I'll be talking more about that, particularly the lengths that people went to back in the day to get a drink on Good Friday. I'm also curious, are there any pubs that actually are remaining closed tomorrow for the day that's in it? Text 0868104106. But I want to go back to, you know, you're talking about children and parenting and Easter and Easter eggs, and, you know, there was just a report was released this week by Aldi. It's the Ireland's Mammy and Daddy's report. And I had a good read of it earlier in the week. If you're a parent yourself, or indeed if you were a parent of children a couple of generations ago, there's some interesting comparisons to be made with generational parenting, if you like. And one of the things that I was very interested in is some points that were being made at the after the report by Colm Nochter. He's a child and adolescent psychotherapist in St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. But he was making the point, I'll talk to him in a second, that, you know, if you look to the 80s, there were very few extracurricular activities for kids back in the 80s. Whereas I saw that even in 2007, there were private schools in Cork were giving parents and children options to go on school tours to places like Beijing. How do you afford to go on a school tour to Beijing? I mean, in our day, and it's a long, long time ago, the school tour would be something like the equivalent of a day trip to Blarney Castle. But now it's Beijing or skiing, for instance. So you got to go and buy the skis and send your son or your daughter off on a skiing trip. But it was very interesting report where they said that 61% of mothers and 42% of fathers surveyed find meeting societal standards of good parenting challenging these days. They looked at 500 parents of children under 12, and they were talking about how parents perceive their value and their worth, right? They were talking about the pressures, and apparently parents these days have the pressure to appear that they're winning as parents, right? And a lot of that is based on how successful other parents' children seem to be in their eyes, right? So it's a bit like trying to keep up with other parents, like trying to keep up with the Joneses, or the pressure we feel as parents, we ultimately then apparently pass down to our children as well. So the Mammy and Daddy's report found several pressure points. Maintaining a work-life balance, managing the financial pressures of running a household. They find that it's more demanding on the relationship with their partner, and they suffer more emotional stress and strains of daily parenting. So what's new there? Has it not always been there? The endless requests for money, not necessarily from your son or daughter, but it could be school events or new shoes or mobile phones or mobile phone top-ups, you know, the cost of Christmas, summer holidays, things like that. The report then went on to talk about parents surveyed said that the time that they have for maintaining their own physical and mental health has been drastically cut since they became parents. Their physical health has gotten worse. And women, more so than men, say that the amount of work involved is disproportionate in the sense that women do more of the work than mothers do more of the work than fathers. So who'd have kids on the basis that everything in life changes and apparently for the worst? Colm Nochter joins me by phone. Colm, good morning. Coleman, I should say. My apologies. Unpack this for me, will you? Because it would give me the distinct impression that having children is bad for your health.
Yeah, no, I had to put a line in the column saying, look, having kids is great and it's a very rewarding experience, but it's not without its challenges. Look, there's, I think from the point of view of what I was struck by the report was that idea of the societal norm and that standard being the issue that people were feeling they were falling short of. I think one of the stats was only 4% felt that they were good enough parents according to what society would determine a good enough parent. And I was interested in terms of how that has changed over the years. So when I was growing up in the 80s, 90s, my neighbours had 8 children on my left-hand side, and I think the other family had nearly 9. So I've only 3, and the stress of trying to get them to their activities on a Wednesday, I was thinking, well, how did they do it? Well, the reality was they didn't have 15 activities during the week to get to. Do you know what I mean? There's that idea. And then I use the barometer of how things have changed. And I, like you said about the school tours, you know, we used to go to the Coca-Cola factory. You know, that was a school tour, whereas now they're skiing for a week.
Do you get
France.
A free bottle of Coke at the end of it then? That's what you were looking forward to.
Coke, yeah. But the idea was the idea that, to say the birthday party circuit, I think that's a really interesting social barometer where, you know, the bouncy castle isn't good enough because, and I was wondering who's putting this pressure on. Is it a society or is it each other? You know, is it one parent kind of, because if you go to the party, the birthday party, and the party bag is massive, when it's your child's birthday, you can't have a smaller bag than the last ones because do people think I'm not generous enough, or are we the scabby family, or so we have to, you know. And I make a line, I don't think it's parents trying to outdo other parents. I think it's a fear of being outdone, which is an important issue. You know, I don't know whether
it's a fear about being outdone. That's a fabulous point. And is it also a fear of letting down your son or daughter in the eyes of others, etc.?
Well, it is. Like, you know, you'll oftentimes hear parents will say, oh, your child only does one sport. And there's a judgment in that. And you're going, well, should they be in 5 or 6? Or should I, you know, am I doing something wrong because you're doing something right? And I suppose the vehicle for that competitive parenting, and I know we always say, you know, social media and children is a big problem. But I think social media and parents is a problem as well, because if you're looking through Instagram and I'm going, oh, there's Neil's son and he's after winning, you know, a black belt in taekwondo and he's only 9. And I'm looking at my 9-year-old and saying, you can't even tie your shoelaces. Why aren't you like Neil's son? You know, there's that almost.
Are you feeling guilty? It's my fault that I didn't spend more time on the sport and training and helping more kind of thing.
100%, because I see my own lads, and if they're struggling a bit on the pitch or there's other kids much better, I'm saying that's because I don't spend enough time in the evening practicing with them. And maybe, you know, so you're always kind of finding the avenues and vehicles for parental guilt are plentiful. You know, you don't have to stretch too far for it. But the idea of we would never have had those levels of comparison before. You know, I don't, obviously the Keeping Up with the Joneses isn't new, but I don't think my mother would have ever read a parenting book or, you know, compared herself to other people as to how things were doing. But our children, I think, are becoming a reflection of our own skill set. So if our children aren't performing, does that look bad for us? Or, you know, are we, and it's ridiculous, and I think most people would take a step back and say, yes, it is ridiculous. Well, I think lots of parents find ourselves inadvertently part of that game where we're all trying to not be outdone by other people or not to, and, you know, that standard bearer of how much is enough. You know, we all want our child to do well, but what does do well look like? And I think that's the bit that's changing.
So you accept that there, as a parent yourself, even though we look at other generations, parents must be smart enough to know that rearing children is difficult, it's exhausting, and it's expensive. There's nothing new in any of that.
No, there's not. But I suppose the quality or the quantity of that expense or the potential for that impact or the microscopic emphasis on, you know, it's interesting in the study, it was like how they feel valued or worth within society. You know, I think this is a cultural issue as opposed to, you know, I think it's like, you know, bullying was there before the internet, but the vehicles for bullying now are so much more, and the impact is so much greater. So, but although these things are not new, the volume or the intensity or the impact they have on our lives can be much more significant. And I think a lot of us as parents, I think, are playing a role in that, even though that's not our intention, you know.
What do they mean when they have a 4% stat in the survey saying 4% saying they measured up to society's definition of good parenting? What's the barometer that you be measured as a good parent, though? Is it financial, or what is it like?
That's my question, and I think it is the idea that you've successful children, you've a good career, you're getting your exercise in, you have your date night every week, so you're meeting all of the things.
All right, yeah.
That you're supposed to be doing. Do you know what I mean?
Is it the car that you drive? Is it the holiday that you go at? Is it the school trip that your son or daughter, all of those things?
Yeah, and the challenge is trying to do all of those things. You know, there's a great thing called the parenting triangle. So if you say a clean house, happy children, and your own sanity are the 3 points, you can only choose two. You know, you can't have three. So something has to go. Do you know what I mean? So the idea of having to do everything is where the challenge comes in. It's about, well, my career, my exercise. Like if we look at the physical fitness was one of those things, so I need to be jogging and doing 5Ks 3 times a week, as well as bringing my children to all their activities, as well as them doing well in the state exams, as well as having a good career, as well, you know.
It's exhausting. And do mothers find it more challenging? Does the research show that mothers find it more challenging than fathers meeting these societal standards of good parenting?
Yeah, I think the financial one was probably, it was born equally amongst two. Definitely the physical health piece was more experienced by mothers, that they felt that was deteriorated. It's interesting, the societal perspective, there was a difference, but not massively different in terms of, I think fathers are under pressure too. Do you know, I think the idea of the provider dad, the quality time dad, the, you know, all of those things, I think that's probably a shift where fathers now are becoming more implicated in the parenting role, generally in that way, and therefore maybe taking on some of that guilt and that competition as well, you know. And you only have to go to a children's sporting occasion to see the competitive dads there, which again, when I was going to sport, I could probably pick on one hand how many times my parents attended the matches. Whereas now every parent is at every training, every match, every, you know, so that over-involvement is new.
So do you think that's unhealthy? My son or daughter would never have, my son played lots and lots and lots of rugby and he was damn good at it, but he never wanted me at a match. It was just, you know, I think that's not uncommon, that not all kids want their parents on the sideline. Is that a healthy thing for parents to go? It can't be healthy when they start shouting and roaring from the sideline, though.
Yeah, no, again, in moderation. But I think the over-involvement of adults in children's lives is an issue. You know, I think when you introduce adults into a child's activity, the fun goes down and the competition goes up. That's just the natural implication of having adults there. And there's very few spaces for children that are adult free, you know. So from the point of view of,
I like that. Yeah, I like that.
But you know, people say, oh, my child has loads of social outlets. They go to GAA, they go to this and that. Those are not social outlets because they're structured events. You have 5 minutes at the start where you can have a chat, and then it's drills and listening. And although there's other children there and there's a social opportunity, it's a social gathering, it's not a social outlet. And so many times as adults, we remove the capacity for children to just hang out and shoot the breeze. And almost remove the capacity for them to become good decision makers because we make too many decisions for them. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah. Does this report, or indeed your own, you know, professional thoughts on it, give any solutions how it can be made better for parents? I would imagine one of the solutions is get rid of competition amongst parents. Yeah, would it be?
Yeah, I mean, I think for your own mental well-being is to just say, if I'm not playing the game, I can't lose. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, from the point of view of if I'm, you know, stressing over the size of a party bag, I have to take a deep breath, step back and say, does this matter? And in actual fact, it doesn't. You know, your child is not going to come back to you in their late 20s and say, you didn't have enough of a party bag for me, or, you know, I didn't get 15 Easter eggs at Easter and everyone else did. Those are not the things that bring children to therapy. These are not issues that will create trauma, but we create so much pressure on ourselves to provide them for fear that not providing them will scar our children, when in actual fact, that's not anywhere near the case. Children need you to be mentally healthy, physically healthy and around. And, you know, maybe stepping back from that race allows you to do that for longer.
Good words of advice. Before I leave you, just in the chat you had with Kevin before you came on the air, you made an interesting point. You said childhood is getting shrunk. What do you, is this in your professional capacity at St. Patrick's Mental Health Services that you'd say that? Childhood is getting shrunk?
I'm no longer with St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. I'm actually down the sunny southeast in SETU Waterford now.
Good man.
To yourself.
Okay,
but,
good man. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I just think, the facts would suggest that, you know, children's conditions like mental health conditions, like eating disorders, depression, anxiety, we would have seen those starting around second year of secondary school. The last few years, we're seeing them start in fifth and sixth class. So the pathologies that you would have seen in older children, we're seeing in younger children. So the exposure to the world through possibly social media and all other things, children are getting older, younger. So their experiences of the carefree childhood is getting less and less and less. The flip side of that is adolescence is probably stretching into 20s. You know, the housing crisis and everything else, people are staying in families much and much longer. But that childhood of shrinking element is real. And so what we're seeing is normally symptoms that you would associate with mid-teens. We're seeing those in the pre-teens, you know, the 11s.
What is that? So depression, anxiety, stress, what is it?
Oh, everything. Self-harm, eating disorder, high levels of anxiety would be the big one from that point of view. But again,
why?
It is that fact that childhood is shrinking. Children are becoming much more overwhelmed, much, much younger. And you know, these things like the eating disorders, the self-harm, the even things like aggression, these things would be ways in which the child is trying to cope with being overwhelmed. So, you know, they'll obviously, the earlier they feel overwhelmed, the earlier they'll use those sorts of behaviors to try and cope, control or communicate them. So yeah, unfortunately we are overburdening our children psychologically and emotionally.
That is sad. Thanks so much, Coleman, for taking the call this morning. I do appreciate it. Thank you. Have yourself a good Easter.
Take care.
Coleman Nocter, child and as adolescent psychologist. Get involved in the psychotherapist. Get involved in the conversation. I know you have been online, but do text 0868104106 as a parent, either of a parent now, you know, navigating through parenting in this decade, or indeed as a parent in the past, as to perhaps how things were different. And they were very, very different. Much of it, of course, has to do with a very different society, which is much more simple back in the day, of course. Now, of course, you got lots and lots of stuff going on. Text 0868104106, back after the break.
Call Neil now. 0818104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Okay, by text to 0868104106 and also on Facebook. I think at the start of the school year, parents should be given a list of options of where the school tour would be. School tour seems to be a big issue for people. The most votes wins, and I'd bet, as an anonymous vote, that most parents would pick a budget trip. Keeping up with the Joneses is crippling parents. Christmas seems to be all year these days. Interestingly, just on that point, it was just just looking at different school tours, say for instance in schools on Lee Side. One of them actually on its website says that they've been to destinations like Austria, France, Germany, Holland, Italy, including Milan, Rome, Pompeii, Sorrento and Capri, Washington, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco and China, as I said, way back in the noughties when they went to Beijing. Others then, I see Lillehammer in Norway for transition year students. The tour to Washington, including a visit to Capitol Hill. I mean, they're fantastic. Trip to Gettysburg, you know, stuff like that. It's all wonderful, absolutely. And travel just broadens the mind, but it certainly broadens the bank balance, or shrinks it, I should say, doesn't it, for parents. Text 0868104106. I'd hate to be raising children now. I raised four. They all got what we could afford, as did all of their friends. It's society now has gone crazy. I don't follow the trends with what society wants. We raised three and are still raising one more, and their personalities have led us in the long run. They've all gotten the best we had to offer at the time, and each and every one of our children always remembers the memories created rather than the material aspects. We've swam in the Great Barrier Reef, and it meant no more to them than sitting watching the X Factor in their jammies eating chocolate. They remember the most who was there, not what they had. That's a cracking text. Maybe get a hamster first before the shock horror of actually taking on the responsibility of parenting people. Yeah, practice. Do you remember the episode in Frasier years ago when Niles, when Daphne was pregnant, he wanted her to prepare for parenting. So what he got was a 2-pound bag of flour, and he put it into the little baby strap that, you know, you can strap the baby to your chest. And he walked around for weeks on end, well, maybe days on end, I can't remember, with the bag of flour on his chest. Kept on banging it off things. You might recall that episode. And at one stage, the 2-pound bag of flour burst. Anyway, just being there and supporting your kids is good enough. Expensive school tours and gadgets are all well and good, but there's no need to get the latest models of everything tech. Yeah, you could say the same about clothing and footwear, couldn't you? Kids don't remember presents in their life. And making memories is what's most important. As a mum, I aim to give my kids the best I can. And if it's a packet of crisps or something like that occasionally, then they're delighted. Don't feel pressured to be mums who buy expensive items. What you can give is all you can do. And kids appreciate little things. There's fierce pressure, though, and much of it is societal pressure from what other people see other parents doing. It's kind of like guilt. Parents feel awfully guilty. Life puts you under pressure. A pressurized parent is stressed, worried about finances, and therefore ultimately less able to be the carefree, loving parent that we all should be. Rent alone is a massive issue, let alone living expenses and excursions and school tours. Provide the child, just one more, provide the child with decent emotional attachment, a feeling of belonging and safety. Care about the kids' problems, and I guarantee kids won't give a single damn or care if the birthday cake is €100 or grabbed from a Super Value shelf. Could somebody please tell me, because I have no idea, what goes into a party bag? This is a bag that you give the kids when they're going home from your kids' party at home. What do you put in it? What's a party bag? Text 0868104106. I want to have a chat with Paul, and I may finish my conversation with him after 10. He's a regular contributor to this programme. He joins me by phone. We know him as Paul the Taxi Man. Paul, good morning.
How are you, Paul? How are you, Neil? And Paul here. Happy Easter to you.
And you too, man. And you too. And you too.
Yeah, Neil, I want to just highlight again
an aspect of your life that I wasn't aware of. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yes. Neil, I was born in a mother and baby home in Rosscrea, Shanross Abbey. You might have been familiar with the movie Philomena.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
I was born in there. And our government, in their wisdom, in the last, on March 20th, opened up a redress scheme for people who gave birth and people who were born in the mother and baby institutions.
So that could be Sean Ross, it could be Besborough, it could be Tuam, it could be anywhere.
Yeah. Exactly. First of all, Neil, I'd like to say to you that this is not about money, to such an extent that if I do get some recompense from the compensation scheme, I've already told someone they can have it, I don't want it. So we'll start from there.
That's kind of, yeah.
I'd like to tell you about a number, Neil, a number called 796. So we can just keep that in your head for a second, 796. Okay. I'll explain the significance in a minute to you. The government, on July the 11th, which is very poignant to me because that's the day I celebrate my birthday, Mr. Higgins, in his wisdom, in Áras an Uachtaráin, signed the mother and baby compensation scheme into law. which basically means that if you gave birth in the mother and baby home, you're entitled to recompense. But if you were born in there, you had to be in there for up to over 180 days to access the scheme. In other words, if you were born in there and were in there for 179 days, you get nothing.
So 180 days is like 6 months.
6 months, plus 6 months, yeah. So you have to be in there for 6 months. And again, their reasoning was that up to the first 6 months of your life, you don't remember it. So it never happened.
Sounds like discrimination to me, actually, to put a number like that on it.
Anyway. Yes, and it's amazing how something very small can resonate with you. Last Friday, with a woman
makes
on the radio...
Makes you feel as if you don't count as much, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, you better believe it. 24,000 of us, Neil.
Last week, I had somebody on the radio... Yeah, 24,000. Last week, you were referencing a call on air. What was that?
Yes, and that was the call about the woman last Friday, the expert on the scents, on the perfumes.
Yeah.
And she said to you that a scent or a perfume could be in your subconscious... And it could make something makes you feel good, and you don't know why you're feeling good, but it's something you remember in your subconscious from your mother's perfume or whatever. So, in
a newborn baby, you could be a few days old. Was the point that was being made, and much later in life, your mother could have been passed away and everything, and you would pass somebody wearing that scent, and it'd be a great feeling of comfort and security from it.
Yes. So in my opinion, if that is on one side of the coin, it has to logically stand that in 50 years' time, a bad scent could give you a bad feeling.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
So my whole life from day one is affected by me being... I was in there 11 days. But this is where it gets really sticky, Neil, right? I was in there 11 days and I didn't realise or find out my history till my father died in 2012. I never knew the full story. Then, through the snippets of information, I pieced the puzzle together, and I figured out, and I went up to Nina to see my I heard an ad in the radio, and I went to Nina to see my birth records from Shanross Abbey, which are held in Nina Hospital. They wouldn't leave my wife come in with me, they wouldn't leave me photograph it, and I saw the birth register with my name on it. I accessed my records from Tusla, and I received them in January of this year. I quote, it says, "These are the records held by Tusla that they received from the mother and baby homes relating to you."
Okay, that must was that in the post? Was it?
Yes.
That must have been. You must have been very, very nervous about opening that, because you're literally opening something that's putting together all of the pieces of the puzzle of your life.
Yes, but this is where it really gets sticky. Attached to the letter, or to my birth records, which says your time of birth, your weight at birth, who delivered you, XYZ, as you'd get in the hospital now. It also, the letter says, "These records were handed by the mother and baby homes to Tusla. We cannot guarantee the accuracy of these records." So everything I know, I don't know. I assume July 11th is my birthday. But the record I have that says that I was born on July 11th can't be verified.
That's the caveat. I mean, far be it for me to give anybody any advice, but it's like the kind of warnings you get on the side of a medicine box. You know, they have to put that stuff down there, you know what I mean?
Yes,
Paul, do you mind if we just look at your story in a little bit more detail after 10? Can you hold on for maybe 5 or 6 minutes?
You're the best.
Thanks a lot. Go put the kettle on. Text 0868104106. So we'll have a closer look at the events of his early life and how he came to be after 10. Text 0868104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Talking about sports, I don't know whether Rory's aware of it or not, but I got a very interesting email in during the week to say that people in Cork may not know this, but we have an ice hockey club on Leaside, very much associated with Russia, Eastern European countries, Canada, America, ice hockey. It's called the Cork Wolfpack. It's got about 100 members, and they even got a proper-sized rink set up in the old Christians Rugby Club in Glanmire. And they're doing very well, thank you, but they need a little bit of public support, if at all possible. And that would be to buy gear for new players and pay for rental costs and things like that. But anyway, I just mentioned it because I got an email in. If anybody wants to get further details or help, it's on facebook.com/CorkWolfPack. All right, and good luck to them in all that they do. Text 0868104106. On parental stress, I could listen to Colm Nochter on the air all day. Everything he said was so interesting. And just two other quick ones here. I reared my family in the 80s and 90s. It was fine, but I wouldn't like to be rearing them now. The pressures are huge. You gotta have the big Jeep. You gotta have the big house. And the kids must all be doing well in school. They've all got to go to college, don't they? It's all pressure today. Love the show, Suzanne. In my granddaughter's school, when there is a birthday party, the parent sends a message to the class telling them to pay no more than a fiver for a present. I love a bit of common sense. I love a bit of cop-on. Text 0868104106. I want to get back to my conversation with Paul. We're talking about, his own journey in life, which started in a mother and baby home. Paul, thanks for holding. Yes. I do appreciate it. What did the information tell you about your mother, your father, your birth and things like that?
Well, the information told me that I was born there to my mother, had me inside there, and I basically spent 11 days inside in the facility. I was taken out of it by my mother, and through my own research, I found out that the only way that I was actually able to get out was because she was actually a married woman. Even though she was in there, she was separated from her husband, but she was still married. So she had rights. From there, my mother and father became a couple. My birth father became a couple. And in 1968, I saw a register in the register of the ledger in Nina Hospital from Shanross Abbey of my father signing my birth certificate in 1968 when I was 5 years old. Basically, the nun did me a good favour. She left the father's name section blank when I was born, which then it was retrospectively filled in, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah. So who are you with through childhood, after birth and the early years?
I was in with my mother and my grandmother and my sister from my mother's first marriage. Yeah. And then my other sister came along, so there was three of us. My sister from the first marriage has passed away since. From there, I was raised in the south side, in the Greenmount area in Cork, but I always had an inkling there was something wrong. My sister had a different name to me, and also I was sent to a private school. And I could never figure out why my buddies on the streets of Barrack Street area were all in Greenmount National School or Sullivan's Quay or whatever, and I went to the private school.
And how was that possible that you were able to go to private school?
Because my mother was able to afford it.
Obviously, yeah.
And from there, and that was in the early 60s, and from there I figured out there was always tension at new term, you know, first class, second class, third class. And I can remember going down to the school with my mother, and I'd sit in the corridor, and she'd go into the office, and she'd come back out and we'd leave. And I figured out later in life, through my life experience, and now this is my opinion again, these are my opinions, Neil, so people can contradict me, whatever. I found out that when I put the pieces of the jigsaw together, if I was in a national school, it would have went against me being born in the mother and baby home. But once the cheque was signed in Ireland of the 60s, people didn't ask too many questions.
And why would it have had to been in a mother and baby home as opposed to just a general maternity hospital?
That my mother I was born in?
Yeah.
And again, I have no one to ask that question too. I would say the shame of 1963 in Ireland.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, then my grandmother, we were poor people. Very, very. I mean, Angela's Ashes was my mother's childhood. Her father went to England, never came back. Her two brothers died of tuberculosis. The Catholic Church did nothing for them, only looked for money at down the line off my mother, who gave them their answer down the line. Things like, horrendous things, Neil, like my grandmother not, you know, again. So in other words, when my mother got a few quid together and became successful, my father worked for a good car company, so they had a few quid. They got a house in the 60s, and I remember how things change. I remember as a very young child, it was a big argument. I was 3 or 4 years old. They were buying, my mother wanted to put the deposit on a house in a new housing estate in the suburbs.
Yeah.
And my father wanted to go to Butlins. And we with the money. And there was a big, because that was the mentality of the time. My mother was looking forward.
My mother won out.
Good. Well, this is where it gets really sticky, Neil, right? How good is this, right? My long birth certificate, right? And I showed it to a solicitor in Silver Springs 2 weeks ago. There's a Dublin solicitors had a class action against the government. What we're talking about today, right, about the discrimination. I showed him my long birth cert, right? 1963, Paul O'Sullivan, father's name, father's address. The address on my long birth cert was the housing estate we bought in 1967.
Oh, wow. So it was
the records are all wrong.
So your birth mother had you in the mother and baby home.
Yes.
Because she was, forgive me if I'm wrong, but she was separated from her husband, but couldn't divorce in Ireland, was in a relationship with another man who was married at the time. He ultimately...
No. My father wasn't married. My father was a single man.
Okay. Oh, sorry about that. Okay.
Was a single man.
Okay. So she was estranged from her husband because that was Ireland back in the day. Couldn't divorce and separate and things like that. Or you'd be very brave if you did just walk away.
Yes.
And then subsequent to her husband, as in dying, she then married the man that she was with.
Yes, and I myself and my late sister were the witnesses at the wedding in this African Missions Church in 1994. She had a small ceremony and she married my father, my birth father, in the African Missions Church. And myself and my late sister were the witnesses at the wedding.
Yeah.
And this is where it gets, how crazy is this, Neil, right? My mother was a high profile woman in Cork City, right, as regards of the area. And she had a store. And I actually met her first husband as a child. He came into the shop.
Go away.
Yeah, I met him. Yeah, I remember meeting him. And I remember, and here's one for you. I met his extended family to another relation. I actually met my mother's married relations from his side. I met those people.
So when he died,
she married my father.
She married your dad because you were born to the man that she was in a relationship, although she was estranged from her husband. And then it was kind of like a nuclear family, like.
Yes, exactly. So there was my sister, but there was different names involved. My late sister had a different name to me.
Of course, surname.
Yeah. But on my records, Neil, and this is the truth, on my records, I have my mother's married name on my records. I was born as one name, and I now live under a different name.
But you don't have any issues then with regards to accessing medical history or wondering if there's anything you need to be looking out for regarding your health and things like that?
Neil, this thing, see, the 11 days I was in there, is the government has said 180 days you're entitled to it, 179 you're not. Neil, I have an issue. I was decades in the army. Okay, I left the army, went to America, whatever, came back. I did a lot of jobs here. I was in some accidents, and I have an issue with my pelvic area, my lower spine, from like a whiplash issue with my pelvis and my back.
Yeah.
And I done physio for it, and I accessed old X-rays I got done 6 years ago. And I was asked a question by a physio a week ago in Douglas in the LDL Wood Clinic. She asked me, and this is a curveball question that can bring it all back like a slap in the face. You know what she asked me, Neil?
Yeah?
She asked me, was I double nappied as a child?
What does that even mean? Why would you want two nappies?
Again, in situations, Neil, where they haven't got time to look after and change nappies for children in orphanages and whatever, they'll put a double nappy on them.
Oh my God, stop.
Okay. And that then the injuries I have, she wanted to know were they, she said they're consistent with someone who's been left long term in a double nappy.
So the double nappy would have caused even more restrictions on your movement as a baby. Your hips.
Yes, it mightn't exactly. So now that the physio asked me that to my face in a physio in Douglas a week ago. So now I'm in a situation where Mr. O'Gorman is telling me that the first 6 months of my life don't matter.
I know.
But I've got a physio 60 years later.
So there's like 27,000 people now taking a class
24.
Action. 24,000 people 24, taking 000. A class action. Yes. Is there a law firm involved in it and everything?
Yes, there is. Yes, do you want the name of them?
I mean, absolutely.
Yes, Coleman Solicitors in Dublin, Talbot Street in Dublin.
Okay.
They sent on the 20th of March, Neil. the 20th of March was the day the compensation scheme opened. And this will leave you know, in my opinion, because actions speak louder than words, how serious they are. The government would not leave you access the form for compensation to fill it in until March the 20th. It didn't come active. Not March the 19th, March the 20th. And on the 20th of March, Wednesday week, last Wednesday, 8 days ago, Coleman Solicitor sent solicitors to Silver Springs Hotel, and they had meetings with people, which included me, yeah, on the day the scheme opened.
Okay, and were there many people at Silver Springs for that?
Again, you see, Neil, it was because of the anonymity. There was all time slots.
Oh, I see, I see. Because but each and every person that would have attended was being precluded, yes, because they weren't over 180 yes days
yes
from birth
exactly
in a mother and baby home yes to apply for a redress.
Yes, from the Cork or the surrounding southern area, because I saw a few Limerick ridges. I saw different... See, everyone got different times to go, and you got a slot.
I think it's very unfair on the basis that they're saying, yeah, you were, but really it wasn't as serious or as important yes as you might think, you know?
Yes.
You were too
small.
And then
again, right, I go to win a tangent, right? I said to you 796, right? 796. That's the amount of babies' bodies they found in the slurry tank and tomb.
Yeah, I know.
Okay,
yeah,
and that's basically, the government would be a lot happier if there was 24,796, in my opinion. Then they'd have no problems with the likes of me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not in that tank, Neil, only for the grace of God.
I know.
No, Neil, as you said a while ago, at the start introducing me, you said, you're a regular contributor. I would like you to do something for me, Neil.
Okay.
Please.
Yeah.
And I'd like to say to the people who are listening to this as well, who are judging me and whatever they say about me, right? I'd like you to ask, Neil, in the upcoming local elections and council elections and general elections, the politicians who press the TAW button, the TAW, yes, in the dial, that vote and the law that they enacted on July the 11th, signed by Mr. or great paragon of liberalism, Michael D. Higgins, he signed that into law.
I will do that.
Ask him why. And, yeah, and in my opinion, right, in my opinion again, anyone who takes solace from anyone, actions speak louder than words. If my wife or my son did me did something wrong to someone, I'd ask them why. Why did you do it?
Yeah.
And I'd like to ask the people, the partners, the mothers, the sisters, the brothers of the politicians, or so-called South Central politicians, the paragons of whatever these sporting organisations, the same people who'll be at the altar on Sunday on the holiest day of the Catholic Church. And they are the people that press the TAW button to discriminate
well
against
said
me.
Well said.
And the ultimate, in my opinion, Mr. Roderick O'Gorman, who through his choices in life and what he's done, he must have fought against discrimination and everything that went with it through his sexuality, which is his own thing, Neil. Everyone's equal. But that's the very man that's discriminating against me. Me and 24,000 like you.
In the sense that there are 24,000 people who were born in mother and baby homes, but
yes,
because they weren't over 180 days of their yes early life in it, they don't yes count financially.
Yes,
and again,
in my opinion,
okay,
right? For me, I maintain that this was done. Micheál Martin in 2021 apologised in the Dáil, as he was Taoiseach of the time. He apologised to what happened to me and my mother and the likes of them, okay? That apology is hollow.
No.
I maintain this act is used to punish in retrospect.
You're so right. Yeah, no, you're so right, because the apology, redress is part of the apology.
Yes.
So the apology doesn't count for you.
Yes.
You weren't included
yes
in the apology. No, it was your mother or your father, for that matter.
Yes. And Neil, I want to say something to you as well, right, just to put it, and for anyone who can't get it, right?
I get it.
The government have said, you get it. The government have said six months of my life don't matter. The first 6 months. Can you imagine if they said to you, Neil, personally, Neil Prendeville, that we're going to choose a time in your life. It just happens to be, for me, it's the first 6 months. 6 months of your life when you are 25,
yeah,
when you are 40,
don't matter. Yeah.
They don't matter.
Yeah.
And your happiest times of your life, your birth to your children, whatever, they don't matter. They're gone. Would you like it?
No, I wouldn't. But I'm glad you're fighting the good fight, Paul. And do stay in touch, for sure.
I will, Neil. And to such an extent, Neil, I'll tell you what the person did. All my life, Neil, and me and the generations of me, they've underestimated us.
Yeah.
They've underestimated us, Neil. Yesterday, I'll show you a hand that I shouldn't probably show you. I'll say it to you. I called yesterday, me, Paul O'Sullivan, called Áras an Uachtaráin. I wanted the address of that man who put his name on that act. I'm writing a personal handwritten note to him, and I want, I'll have a little letter on it. Why did you sign it?
Oh, that'll be interesting.
I'm going to write a letter to every one of them, Neil. And I'd like you personally, not to forget, Neil, please, 796, that's the bodies in the slurry tank that they know about, and ask every one of them, because they will be on your station, Neil. They'll be on your station.
They certainly will. But do stay in touch, though, because I know that everybody, me included, would be very interested in the journey forward now.
And I'd like to, again, I'd reiterate, anyone who's coming to the doors, campaigning for anyone who pressed the tar button there, you're complicit. You're in with them. He signed it with them. So that's what I'd say to you.
Okay, listen, in the short, look, do stay in touch. Be very interested to see what Michael D. Higgins says by I appreciate it. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you on Red FM for airing it.
No problem. Okay, thank you so much for sharing. Take care for now, Paul. Text 0868104106. You can be sure that's the story we'll be revisiting, because there will be many updates, I would imagine.
Call Neil now. 0818104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Text 0868104106, and I'll come back to them in a few minutes' time. But let me get back to the phone lines. We're chatting with Paul, the taxi driver. That's prompted other calls, amongst them Patrick. Good morning,
Neil. How are you?
Good, thank you. You are a Besborough baby.
Yes. Yeah, we had myself and yourself had this conversation before, actually. I think probably about a year or two ago. I was born in Besborough.
But you were, again, just like Paul, the taxi driver, you were there for less than 6 months. I imagine many babies were there for less than 6 months.
Loads. But Neil, it's a mass thing what they're doing here, because for the simple reason that my date of birth is the 29th of September. But in July, like when I got onto Tuusla, I got obviously documents from Tuusla, but I was eating Farley's Rusks in July.
Yeah.
So the thing about it is, they're saying there, we say, for example, my view on this is that I'm in there for 5 months or whatever. It's not the 5 months or the 6 months or 14 days or whatever it is. It's what the stigma that you live with for your life. And people might think, oh, there's no stigma in being adopted. But back then there was. And you were denied information. You were denied everything. Doors closed on your face everywhere by any time you tried to get any information at all. And I mean,
why would the redress preclude, say, a baby that was 5 months old in Besborough, 5 months of their life, and then was adopted, and a couple took that baby to be their own, and another baby who went through the very same scenario, exactly the same, mother. Gave birth, maybe a young mother, up from the country, couldn't bring the baby back for the shame, went home herself without the child. Why would that child born 5 months in Besborough be treated in a very same similar scenario differently to a baby that was in Besborough 7 months?
Well, you see, as I said to you a second ago, it's maths. And there's 24,000 people in this situation. So if you add up the cost of that, right, I mean, it's easy there for them to go and spend, we just say, 20, 30 million on a Patrick's Day parade, junk it over to America. But I mean, we've suffered with this all our lives. And it's not about their miserable 5,000 or whatever they're offering people. I mean, I don't want any money off them. I just want them to acknowledge it and somebody to apologize to me saying that what they done was wrong. But nobody ever did. I mean, nobody's ever from the church, as you know, or we just say like the likes of Besborough or whatever, there's still nuns living there. I mean, nobody's ever been prosecuted for anything like that. Mm. What they've done was disgraceful. Now, I was telling your researcher there, basically, I told you the story before about the day I was called into Sarsfield's court.
You had been searching for a long time, had you?
Yes. Oh, till I was in my 50s. Like, I mean, I'm in my late 50s now, but my early 50s.
And you eventually a letter saying, come to Sarsfield Court?
Sarsfield Court. Yeah. So I went down, I got a letter, just come down to Sarsfield Court. We'd like to have a chat with you. So this is the gospel honest truth, right? I walked in the door. My friend was with me on the day who'd verify it. They said, come in, sat down. They're very nice. Just into a room. This lady walked in the door. 1 minute, right, she was in the room. She said, hi, how are you doing? You're Patrick McCarthy. I said, yes. She said, you're searching for your mum all through these years. I said, that's correct, yeah. I'm unfortunate to tell you, sorry, she's died. Thank you very much. If you need any more further information, we'll be in touch. And walked out.
But she must have tried to ask her a question. You say she just stood up and walked out.
I tried. She walked out. said she can't discuss the case anymore.
So what was the point then of meeting you?
To tell me she was dead.
Right. But you
got on to Tuesday afterwards. They then, obviously, as you could imagine, I rang them a few times afterwards. They said to me, oh, we'll organise counselling for you. Never done nothing for me. Now, I moved house about 5 years ago.
But you were entitled to you were entitled to that information. Because you're saying...
Oh, I was entitled to everything.
So why did the death of your birth mother preclude you from getting your information?
No, I'm not. It's not entitled to my information at all. I mean, when they made that law, we were entitled to our birth certs.
Yeah.
I don't know how long ago. That was only a few years ago, I think.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm going back a good, we just say 5, 6, 7 years here, where they brought me in and just said to me, basically, your mother has died, and that is on my mum's life, as true as she's buried in Kilcully.
Was there anything illegal in what she said to you?
No, it was nothing illegal. It was just a cold callousness of it.
So you weren't entitled to your birth cert or your mother's name or where
not
she was from?
No. She wouldn't give me any information. Because, you see, we weren't entitled to it then.
Okay. This was before the change. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was before the change about 6, 7 years ago. Okay.
And when did you clearly since then have found out?
I have my original birth cert now, yeah.
When did your mum die? Do you know that?
We say about 7 years or so. She would have been dead about 8 years ago now.
Did she live to an old age?
77.
Okay. Would you like to have met her?
Oh, yeah, sure. I tried on various... I went down to Besborough, tried everywhere, tried to ring, as you say, Tusla, the adoption societies. Everywhere I was shut down.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I know for a fact that I heard afterwards that she wanted to meet me, and they shut that down as well.
Isn't that tragic?
It's so sad. But I mean, the thing about this is, as you made a very good point at the start, it's not about one day, 5 days, 5 months, a year. It's not about that. It's about the fact of like that. What, like, there's no difference to somebody being 4 months or 10 months.
No.
You still go through the experience, and it's the life afterwards, Neil, that the point that I'm making of all the sorrow and hardship and sadness that you go through. Now, I was blessed. I had fantastic parents. And I mean, I was probably one of the luckiest people that alive that came out of a mother and baby home. And the thing about it is just...
And were they aware and okay with the fact that in spite of your wonderful life and childhood and you were reared by beautiful people, that you still wanted to know more about your birth mother?
Was my mum aware of it?
Yeah.
No, basically I didn't really talk about it a lot much because I never wanted to hurt them, you know, okay. Thinking it, and that was probably my head.
So here we are now talking to somebody who was always looking for his mother, his birth mother, and she was always looking for him, and she went to her grave never knowing that he was also desperately trying to find her. That is so sad.
Yeah. It's terrible.
You know, you shouldn't need a law change. If society knows, or those in authority knows, whether it's Tusla, HSE or whomever, or even the nuns know that a son is looking for his birth mother and his birth mother is looking for a son, and the right thing to do is to unite them. What would stop
them? To unite them together, yeah. But it's just, and now they bring out this other thing. So like, it's like, do you know what it's like? It's like more insult on top of what they've already done. I mean, they can keep their money. I don't want their money. It's not going to make up for what I went through for 50 years. You know what I mean? So,
I know. Well said. And do you think that maybe you might like to be part of the class action?
Yes, I would. I mean, I never even knew there was one. Because that was my whole point. I sent in a text earlier on saying that the guy that was on, if you want to pass him my details, that I'd like to get a lot of people, whatever, but I didn't know there was one going.
You can do that, so, but also, if you just want to Google, go... I'll talk with Coleman Solicitors, see if I can get them on the air and they can shed some light on what they're planning. But Coleman Solicitors in a Google search, Dublin, put in Coleman Solicitors Redress, Dublin, and you'll find all the details you need there. And just finally, and I don't mean to pry, do you know if your birth mother had a happy life or what she actually did in her life?
Well, she died of a heart attack. She moved to America in the January after I was meant to have been born. And that's what I know. She had two other sons. I think she had a fairly happy life. My birth mother, yes, she had a happy life, I think. But that's all I can basically tell you, because they wouldn't give me any other. She had two other sons.
Okay, so you would have brothers?
Yes, and I made contact, actually.
How'd that go for you?
They turned around and said that I was lying, and that would never have been their mother, that they would have known and stuff like that.
But it was their mother, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah, 100%.
So they didn't want to know.
Basically, they rejected the point and said that I was only fabricating. They thought that I was after their mother's estate or something. But look, that doesn't bother me. I mean, look,
that's another kick in the ghoulies, isn't it?
But yeah, but there's been kicks right through, Neil. That's what people don't realise. I mean, you hand your birth cert in for anything. Like, you have to apply for, like, years ago, we just say, for example, like, if you're not adopted, Neil, you know yourself, you bring your birth cert in, right, to a school thing or to a job application, to something going through your life where you have to produce your birth cert a lot more before computers came on.
Time and
time again. So you were always the one who had to have this special little birth cert with, like, not the same as everybody else. You were always different.
Yeah, always different.
Do you know what I mean? You couldn't have your standard birth cert, and people look, oh, I never knew you were adopted and stuff like that. And then going through school when, like, my parents told me when I was 7. But yes, I can remember being in school and turning around and being called the B word because you didn't have a mother.
Yeah, that was in common parlance back in the day, the word bastard, yeah. Of course, it was an accepted term, and it wasn't even seen as a term of abuse back then.
It wasn't, and the thing about
it's
it
a
is,
horrible
people
word.
Think that, yeah, of course it is, and people think that when you go through your 20s or your 30s and you get older, that this goes away. It never goes away.
I know, Paul, I know, sorry, I know, Patrick, I know. I don't know, but I can imagine, just listening to your story, you know.
You probably look at a couple of your friends, as in, that I know as well, that they've been adopted, and they'll explain, I'm sure, which they probably have explained to you.
Let me talk to PJ down in East. But nice catching up with you, Patrick.
Chat, yeah. And I'll talk to you soon, Neil.
Do check that out, Coleman Solicitors. I'll endeavour to get them.
I will, of course. Thank you very much.
Take care for now. PJ, good morning. It's interesting because Paul, the taxi driver, was actually born in Sean Ross Abbey, same place as you, early 60s as well. Could have been.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I missed, I'm coming in from work, so I actually missed the.
Yeah, yeah.
Paul. I actually missed the opening
Sean
conversation.
Ross Abbey. Yeah, he was on the air there just before 10. Born in Sean Ross Abbey, 1964. But because he wasn't there for longer than 6 months and a day, redress doesn't apply. So therefore, the apology that was given really isn't meant for him, you know?
No, and it's not meant for any of us that is in this predicament. I mean, like, even growing up in a rural area in Ireland at the time, I lived on the Leash to Kenny borders at the time, you know, and the stigma that went around was horrendous, absolutely horrendous. Like, my birth certificate, where it said father's name, there was a big stripe across it. It was left blank, just a stripe put on it. And you know something, Neil, I may as well have wore that stripe across his face.
Why? How did that impact on you? And when you were older, when that started to hurt, did it?
No, it affected me. Well, it affected me when I got older, but like, it affected my education in school. I was the one left at the back of the class, you know. The kids used to tell me in school that there was a smell off me, they could smell the bastard off me.
What?
Used to tell me there was a smell off me.
They could smell the bastard off you.
They could smell the bastard off me. I got it on several occasions.
Did you want to remember another evening? Did that confuse you when people would say that?
When you tell a child something new, the child would believe you. And I thought it was. Now, the house we lived in didn't have running water, or we had an outside toilet and that in it, you know. Like you said, it's a very rural back in on the East Kilkenny borders in the 70s. And I used to come home and I'd tell Mammy, you know, one of the lads said there was a smell off me today in school, and she'd say, oh, don't worry, son, I'll give you a bath now tonight and you'll be fine. We had one of those big galvanized baths, you know. She'd pull out the bath with a bar of Lifebuoy soap and I'm not going to be glowing coming out of it, you know.
But, that wouldn't stop the name calling though, because there was no smell off you.
No, it never did.
It was just learned behaviour that children learned from adults.
Well, this is it. You see, you have the parents' tongues going through through their children's mouths. But the stigma was it wasn't only in school; it was in society. You were left feeling that little bit different, that little bit out of place. You know. Now I was lucky because I was in Shonross Abbey. I was born on the 4th of April, 1964. I'm 60 next week, actually. And
happy birthday!
Thank you very much. I was taken. I got my information back from Tulsa after many doors for about 60. I started searching around about 30, 35. I started searching around about my past, about my dad. I was taken out of Shonross Abbey by my nan, and I would have been reared with her family. And
so you called Nan Mam, did you? Or where was your mother?
Nan was Mammy. Mammy done everything to me, and her husband was... My grandfather would have died about 2 years after I was born, so she brought me up on her own, and she already had 10 other children, you know.
And was that your birth mother's... mother?
Yeah, my birth mother would have been one of her daughters. So I would have known... I would have known my mother as my sister up to about 10 years of age.
Wow, EJ, wow.
You see, because this was the big secret that was around it. Now, I was very lucky. I had a great life with my nan, a wonderful woman, man and woman.
Did somebody tell you when you were 10, was it, that your sister was actually your mum?
I was told when I was 10. And that's a bombshell. You know, that's a bombshell. And I'm trying to have a good relationship with Rosie. I couldn't even call her mum. You know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, Mammy was Mammy. I was there since I was born. I'm 10 years of age now.
It's confusing. You're not my
Mammy. My sister's my Mammy now. It's a bombshell. It's very hard to get around.
I can imagine.
Now, I didn't go on to have a good relationship with my birth mother, but I never had a mother and son relationship. She'd say, you know, I love you, son, and I'd say, I love you too, Rosie.
I never mentioned the word mum. I know. How could it be any different? It sounds as if clearly it was far from ideal, but you know, because you had a search for your birth dad, but the other aspects of your life are happy ones, apart from the way society treated you. But on the home front, it sounds wonderful.
Oh, it was. I was very lucky, and my wife had a surprise 60th birthday party for me in the Red Store in Yall on Saturday. And what's left of my family are around 60. I'm the youngest of them. There was 10, including me, was 11. Most of us, I think there's about 4 left alive now, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm still their brother.
Yeah.
And they still refer to me, and their children refer to me as Uncle PJ, and they're adults themselves, and they know exactly. So I was very lucky that way.
And what about your dad? What about your dad? Did you manage to find him?
My dad's no. My dad's name was Byrne. He lives up in Dublin somewhere. From what I gather, he was married at the time, but he would have been known to the family as Rose's boyfriend or whatever the case might have been.
Yeah,
you know, he would have been known
married man in the parish.
He lived in Dublin. Bear in mind, Rosie lived down the country, but she was working in Dublin.
All right. She met him. Okay.
You see? So there was a photograph going around there that I had of him, and he was holding me in his arms. He was very, very young. But that's the only point of contact I had with him. I went looking for him, and I found a tombstone in the end. You know? But it was just the stigma of it.
Wow. And
just everywhere you turn. Listen to Paul there this morning, the bit I did get of it. It was just a breath of fresh air. I said, this is me talking. Like, that's me talking on that radio, you know? And if you would pass my number on, I was talking to Kevin there just before I went on with you, and I was saying to pass my number on. to him, and he can contact me at any time. Because
the children, when you were very small, and again, this is up in the Midlands, isn't it? Were cruel to you in school. Were adults cruel to you as well?
Oh yeah. There was one particular story. I was coming home from school one evening. Now, Martina would have been my elder sister. She would have been about 2 or 3 years older than me. Yeah, about 3 years older than me. But we were coming home from school one evening, like a rural school. We had a 5 mile walk to school and back home in the evenings, you know. And we were coming home one evening with some other children, and one of them hit Martina, you know. So I punched him in the bloody nose, didn't I?
Mm.
And he ran off crying. And we had to pass by his house. He would have been big farmers. We had to pass by his house. And wasn't his mother out on the road waiting for his past boy, like. So she says to me, she says, "You hit my John, didn't you?" I said, "I did." I can say her name, she's never with me. I said, "I did, Mrs. Cal." I said, "I did hit him." She said, "Why did you do that?" I said, "Because he hit my sister." And she says, "Your sister?" She says, "Go home, you effing bastard." She says, "You don't know who owns you."
You say he scratched the surface at all, boy, in Ireland back then, and it was too obvious.
Oh, God, yeah.
Felt.
Yeah. And I went home and I was destroyed. I went home and I said to Mammy, "What's after happening?" And we got country mothers at the time. She got the bike out and she got the headscarf on, so I knew there was going to be trouble somewhere.
Yeah.
She had it off. And
Nan on the warpath. How did that end?
Mammy was on the warpath. So she came back about just a good half hour later, and she says to me, "Don't worry, son." She says, "Mrs. Cal never speak to you like that again."
Well said.
Now, whatever she said, yeah. I don't know, because I didn't hear anything.
As we say, she put manners on her.
Yeah.
Oh,
she did. Well, I got my information back now in December of last year, and most of it I already knew from tidbits that was passed down.
Okay.
See, the family loved me as theirs, so they never really dug into us. When I'd ask you questions, they'd ask, "Sure, that doesn't matter, son. You know, we're all here for you," and they always were.
Yeah.
But you still need to know.
Yeah.
But I got the information back anyway, and there was a letter in it. The most important part was there was a letter in it that was written, just a few lines, there's no even heading on it who it was for, but it's the first time I actually seen my father's name in my mother's handwriting. It's the first time I'd ever seen it.
What did it say? Do you know what it said?
It was just, "I, Rose McNamara, pregnant, 22 she was, father's name, Jim Byrne, Dublin." And there was other little bits of information there, I think name and address or something like that, or her own. But just to see my dad's name written in my mother's handwriting.
I know.
It was a bit of an emotional moment,
I can imagine.
But the doors were closed in my face for years of this coming along. And it was Roderick O'Gorman who locked all that information, between Roderick O'Gorman and the rest of the government that locked that information up. It's a great shame on them.
Listen, thank you so much. Time precludes me to continue the conversation, but I think this is probably a natural end to it with me wishing you a happy 60th birthday. Have a happy birthday, pal.
Thank you very much, Neil. Thank you. I have a little bottle of 10-year-old Bushmills in there.
Enjoy it. 60, it's a big age. Well done. Nice one, PJ. Take care. Bye-bye.
Cheers, Neil. I'm well done on bringing that topic up.
All right.
Well done.
Okay. Back after 11. Text 0868104106.
Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. We were talking yesterday, and I will come back to calls in a few minutes' time after the break, but huge amounts of texts on different topics. I've never seen it as busy. There's a lot going on, isn't there? And there's a lot to digest and a lot to be disquiet about. Amongst them, much of the conversations that I would have on this here radio program where people express a thought or an opinion could deemed to be a hate speech crime under the proposed legislation for this hate speech crime. But at the same time, we're never too far from discrimination, are we? Both myself and my wife are in our 70s. We have a form to fill out to renew our medical card. This is proving difficult for us as our eyesight is not great. They're threatening to cut us off now if we don't return the form. I thought everyone is over 70 is entitled to it automatically. Anyone coming into this country seems to get one, but yet here we are having to justify it because we're past 70. We've lived here all our lives and we're being discriminated against. You were talking on the air about hate speech. Is this perhaps hate towards the elderly? Don't know why they do that. Do they do it, just forgive me, just to check that people are still around, or what? Is it at 70 that you have to, there must be easier ways to work out whether a person still needs a medical card or not. And imagine, knowing Ireland anyway, those forms are probably very lengthy, not the easiest thing in the world to fill out. But if you do, just, yeah, I don't, what can I tell you? The old eyesight isn't the greatest, I know that, but fill it out, you know, be angry about it, be annoyed. Be frustrated, but fill the damn thing out, I suppose, because you're not going to change that policy anytime soon. Or if you need help with filling it out, I'm sure somebody else would help. But thank you for the text nonetheless. I hope you get it done. We're talking about pubs yesterday, and, you know, the closure of pubs and what have you. I'll talk more about that tomorrow on Good Friday, for a lot of different reasons. One of the biggest, I suppose, nails in the coffin of the pubs to an extent was, although I imagine the staff wouldn't say that, but one of the things that changed very much, I suppose, was the smoking ban 20 years ago tomorrow. 20 years ago tomorrow. Pubs are finished. And I think it's lovely jubbly. Good riddance to them. Greedy brewers and the VFI, they're just a joke. They'll be closing soon enough, blaming everyone bar themselves, I suppose. More and more pubs. The VAT rate is up because they were greedy. You can drink at home and have 12 cans of Guinness for €20 from Aldi. Lovely jubbly, buy your Guinness in Aldi. 12 cans for €20. Imagine that. Like, crikey almighty. What is that each? What is that each? Is about 160, 170 a can. But you know something? It's very interesting because Good Friday years ago, of course, the pubs were all closed. Not anymore. I suppose we'll arrive at a point now in the not too distant future when the pubs will be open on Christmas Day as well. But I think publicans also will just make up their own mind. You're not obliged to open on any given day at all. That's why I see more pubs now not opening on Mondays or Tuesdays or Wednesdays, or pubs that used to open at 11 in the morning now don't open until 4 or 5. But Good Friday was mental back in the day because people would go up to the airport for a drink on Good Friday. I wonder, was it that you weren't desperate for the drink, but you just did it because you knew that it wasn't allowed or you couldn't do it, and on that basis you had to kind of do it. Do you know that kind of weird twisted logic? Maybe it was a man thing, I don't know. But there was a public bar up in the airport, and you could get jar up there. The same for the train station. Some people boarded a ferry and went to Wales and supped on the ferries. Others booked into hotels. You could get a drink because you were a resident. And others then, I suppose, sports clubs are very handy at the time, you know, rugby clubs and what have you, or tennis clubs, because you could go in there even on Christmas Day, drink away on Christmas morning, go home, fall asleep, miss the Christmas dinner. Or, of course, the most common of all on Good Friday, I suppose, would it be the side door of your local, or somebody would know a pub where the side door would be open and they'd slip in and out there. Anyway, your thoughts on that are welcome. Text 0868 104 106. Back after the break.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Okay, lots on the hate speech issue, and an awful lot more then on pressure on parenting and things like that. And also quite a lot of calls coming in with regards to mother and baby homes. Now, I just did a quick search there just during the ad break, and this mother and baby home redress scheme, which is financial compensation, and you know, acknowledgement of people's beginnings, if you like, this kicked in and became live, if you like, on the 20th, which would be last Wednesday week, you know, yesterday week past the 20th of March. There are 34,000 people expected to apply for compensation. That's the figure of those that can apply and get redress and compensation. But there's another figure then. So the 34,000 people are expected to apply, but 25,000 others will not be eligible for the payment because of the criteria we've been talking about earlier on. That's a couple of paragraphs in the Examiner from last week. So 34,000 can, 24,000 can't. So I don't know why, I just can't understand why this would be brought in, that you would divide like this, for no other reason, I suppose, than to save money. But yet it is unfortunately a country that those in authority and control waste vast quantities of it every day anyway. But anyway, Christy, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
They're interesting stats, aren't they? 34,000 children, who are adults now, mother and baby homes beginnings, can apply, but 25,000 cannot because they weren't there long enough, they say.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. What was your own city? What was your own, where were you born yourself, my friend?
I was born in Besborough in November 1960.
And how long did you stay?
I was there 9 months.
Okay. So you would be treated differently then to somebody who was there 5 months and 30 days kind of thing.
Correct, Neil. Correct, correct. As I, it's wrong. It's extremely wrong. Everyone should be treated equally, or the amount of time, maybe the more money you get, but everyone from day one, if you were in the door and just born, you should be entitled to redress. It's very, very wrong.
Why would they make it?
That's entitled to it myself.
And you're saying that as a person who's entitled to it, that 34,000 will be facilitated and 24,000 will be told, actually, no. Do they, when they make decisions like this, do they not realise that it will make people, many people, angry? Decision like
I think that's what some of the reasons I feel personally, Neil, I feel that it's done on purpose to divide and make people take them off the government, as in it was Roderick O'Gorman's office and the government came up with this idea and this scheme, so to speak. So it was done, as far as I'm concerned, it was done so that people would be, you know, arguing amongst themselves and take the heat off the government, you know, divide and conquer kind of an issue.
But was there, you know, a lot of the time there are recommendations made, or they have working committees or groups who make these kind of decisions. Was that kind of the protocol that was followed?
There was lots of other, there was lots of groups, and there was lots of, I was on one, it was called the Oak Consulting. I was on it 3 years ago. I was one of the people that was asked, would I put my input on it as a person that was born in one of the mother and baby homes. And as you know, Besborough, Sean Ross and Cass and Pollard, mother and baby homes, as well as others, were run by the same order of nuns. It was the Sacred Heart Order,
right,
who have not given any money towards any of the redress, by the way. They haven't given a penny, not one penny. I think the only people that have contributed has been the Bond Secures, and that was for Tuam. But
and would they have money, the other orders, the nuns?
Neil, sure, of course they have. Like, I mean, they're multi millionaires, you know, the orders. You know, the nuns, the Sacred Heart Order is based in Chigwell in England, and there should be a property everywhere, sure, look.
Right.
But yeah, they haven't contributed any money. But I went off what you were asking me there, sorry.
Yeah.
About Oak Consulting, my apologies, about Oak Consulting. I was on it, and we said it was all for one, and you know, that we wanted everyone to be treated equally, and if they wanted to do a step tier system, was the longer you were there, the more money you got. But the 6 month cut off period is a total disgrace, you know. It's very wrong.
Minister, I'm reading again, this is on breaking news. Minister for Children, Roderick O'Gorman, said the legislation would be amended to ensure people who were in and out of institutions for up to 180 days would not be ineligible. What the hell does that even mean?
When did that come in?
I'm reading it there from breaking news back in 2022. I mean, this has been knocking around. So he didn't honour that.
No.
So this has been This has been discussed for a number of years before it was eventually passed into law last week. So because I see Social Democrats, TD, Holly Cairns saying people would like a proper explanation why certain people are excluded from the redress scheme. Who else do I see here in this article is referencing TD Sean Sherlock says that the issue of 180 days is hanging out there like the sword of Damocles, and there must be some way that they, you know, his words are, I think there must be some way in our reporting mechanism to speak for those people. Speak for those people would mean to me include those people. But they didn't. But they didn't.
No, there was nobody. They didn't listen, Neil. There were so many groups, and there were so many emails. There was so much. They just didn't listen.
But you were part of the consulting, and you recommend that you said it should have been one for all and all for one.
That's what we said.
Why did they say no to that, though?
I just think that the consulting was a PR exercise, personally, that it was to look as if they were doing something. I think this was from day one all planned out. You know, I mean, like the industrial schools and the Magdalens are still looking for some redress, some are still due money, and this is 20 years down the road. So their record as in paying out isn't really good, is it?
No, it's not. And Roderick O'Gorman said, and again, this is in the same article, that this is a time-based scheme rather than an evidence-based option. That the time-based scheme was the right one. Now, listen to this. It was the right one to build in because of it would recognise the impact on individuals on time spent in these institutions. Like, that you, if you were there under 6 months, you would have a hugely different time or experience than if you were there 7 or 8 months. So that's childish.
He's talking rubbish. The minute you're born there, you should be eligible for redress. I mean, I can't understand that somebody that's there for 5 months and 3 weeks and a person is there a week longer, their experience is different. I just don't understand that at all, Neil. You know, we're all very angry about it. I'm in one of the groups here where I'm on the Besborough Mother and Baby Home group. And we're very upset that our brothers and sisters and our friends aren't eligible, some of them, you know. But there's really, we did our best. There's not much we can really do at the moment, you know.
Yeah. Well, there's a class action, though. By many of those who are precluded.
I haven't heard too much about that, to be honest with you. I'll have to do a little bit of research about that. I don't know who's doing this class action, you know?
Yeah, well, it's through a Dublin solicitor called Coleman Solicitors, who I hope to speak to. We've already left a message for them, and I spoke earlier this morning with some people who were involved in it. There are different bands, are they? Are there different amounts of money for time spent?
There are, yes, there are. There are different times, there are different amounts of money. I think after 6 months, if you're there a year, you get double. If you're there a year and a half, the mothers from day one, the minute they go in the door, they're given compensation or redress. And it goes up and up and up.
It
and
does.
That's the way it should be if they wanted to do it properly. That's the way it should have been with anyone. It's the mothers are getting it from day one, the adoptees are getting it from 6 months.
But the child at birth's forgotten.
Yes, definitely, yes. Yes, yes.
Mm. It doesn't, there's no reason in a country that is awash with money and we waste so much of it that they should be
so never
cruel.
So wealthy. We were never so wealthier. And this was their opportunity, Neil, to get it right. To get it right and look after the people that didn't have a good, you know, that were treated differently. And by doing what they're doing, they're treating the same people. They're doing the exact same. They're discriminating against these people again. It's horrible.
Yeah, they are indeed, because they're talking to me on the air, and they are upset and they are angry, and rightly so. Okay, Christy, thanks so much for taking the call. Appreciate it.
In spite of your
advice and contributions, they weren't listening. Coleman Legal is the name of the law firm. I imagine I'll have an opportunity to talk to them in the coming days, for sure I will. Back after the break, text 0868104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
All right, interesting. Two different, completely different points of view with regards to pensioners and their medical card applications. The first one, heard you speaking about medical cards. It's a joke. I was doing mine also, but I was uploading all my documents online, which is not a big deal. But they kept saying that I hadn't done it. I tried and uploaded successfully, in my opinion, the documents 10 times. They also wanted my two job summaries, last job summaries from Revenue. It's been over 3 years since I worked there. Why would they want that? When emailing, they don't elaborate on basic emails and don't explain what they're looking for, says Lorraine. So that's one point of view with regards to having to reapply for medical card at 70. I was listening to you read out the text from the over 70s couple who were complaining about filling out a form to renew their medical card because of failing eyesight. Apparently, they had no problem writing a long text to you, did they? I just wish people would stop complaining and judging others and be appreciative for what they have. I'm fed up with it. Life is tough for everyone, especially those coming in from war-torn countries. It's Holy Week, for God's sake. Say a prayer instead of complaining, says Mary in West Cork. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. Obviously rattled your cage, but thank you for your contribution. On the pressures of parenting, regarding kids' parties, this is how we started this morning, where parents feel inadequate, feel as if they're competing, and they're just literally... My words, really, the Aldi survey doesn't say it, but they're just drowning In parental responsibility and parental grief, it seems. So regarding one aspect of it, kids' parties, it depends on if you allow yourself to buy into the pressure. I recently had my son's birthday party, and because three other boys had their birthdays around the same time, we just did one party. Great idea. We booked the local Astro Pitch, ordered pizzas, and one of the mothers made the cakes. We said no presents or money were to be given. The children were very happy. They had a lovely afternoon together. We've done the same numerous other years, done the very same thing, where we'd have shared costs for perks or Airtastic. And we'd have said only put a limit of a fiver in the card. That's brilliant. That really is common sense at work. Isn't it true? If you have children, they will never, ever, ever be able to remember a single present. Well, probably not. They might maybe a Santa present or something, but they will have memories. It's events that they remember later in life, not the gifts or the presents. But they remember places, times, occasions, happy memories involving family, not the gift. Before people get on board a plane, when they have to show their documents or passport, why can't they keep them until the plane lands, as in the plane keep the details, and hand over people's details to airport police on the other side, or whoever needs to view them? That way, there is no way that they can enter Ireland without documents to tear them up. Believe me, we need to stop criminals coming, as twice now I find myself living next to rented houses with criminal behaviour forcing me to move house. I'm too old to move a third time, I can tell you. Won't come on, as I might be accused of hate speech. Romanians and white South Africans were my problems. I had gorgeous Nigerian neighbours. That's very interesting. That's very interesting, because even that line alone would be deemed, even though it's factual and somebody can stand over it as being factual, it would be deemed as being a racist, and therefore it would be deemed as being hate speech. Surely the referendum response is enough to confirm that they'll be getting the exit door anyway by the end of the year. As in, when there is a general election, they will have their arses handed to them on a plate. You think? Text 0868104106. But back to earlier issues from earlier in the week. I didn't get time to do everything at the time, and I'm happy to jump in and out of stories because that's what we do anyway. Richard's originally from New York. I think he's a Brooklyn man from New York City, living in Cork for about 6-7 years now. You driving there, Richard?
Hi there. Hi, I'm here.
Is it safe to talk? Are you out walking? Are you in a motor car? What are you doing?
I'm in a car, but I'm going to pull over.
Excellente. Thank you for your very lengthy text. As you're pulling over, let me let people know what you're saying. He says, New Yorker, lived here since 2017. And in that period of time, you've seen the city slowly degrade over the years, and it is now absolutely miserable. Is that right?
It is. It is. That's how I see things. And that's not to say that I don't like Cork City. I do. I think it's a great spot to raise a family. I think that there's a lot of great things going on in the city, but we want to see the city grow in a balanced way. And so if we're seeing the city grow with a lot of high-rise buildings and we see cranes everywhere and we call that positive growth, but we don't invest in the youth and we don't invest in the people and the small businesses and see them grow as well, then it's going to be imbalanced. And we're going to have a lot of nice, pretty spaces, and we're not going to have a lot of nice things going on.
Yeah, the plan, though, is to spend tens and tens and tens of millions on green spaces and recreational areas. So I wouldn't be inclined to worry about that too much, you know. There is a lot of regeneration going to be done around, say, for instance. I'm going to have to put you back on hold there just to resolve this problem because I'm getting feedback big time. I don't know whether your radio's on or whether it's WhatsApp, but just on the point that he's making, I was looking through the current documents that there's a booklet going around. You probably got it at home. It should be coming through the post. Our city is changing. And they break down all of the different ways that it's changing, you know, the amount of money that's going to be invested in what they love to call the public realm. The new cycle lanes, the upgraded pedestrian crosses, the crossings, the extra bus stops, the 30,000 square meters of surface resurfacing of our roads. That's got to be a good thing, isn't it? They're promising us no more potholes. But anyway, when you turn into the pages of it, you do see a lot of work being done then on green spaces. I see photographs here of a beautiful looking Morrison's Island after the flood protection is done, and it becomes a and that would involve extending the boardwalk all the way down along Morrison's Island. So ultimately, it actually would join Laps Quay, if you like. And then, of course, you've got a massive regeneration going on in Bishop Lucy Park. You've got everything that's going on down the marina, with the marina park and extensive areas like that, and Horgan's Quay. So I wonder, is the line any better, Richard? Anyway, you're saying it's no point building up if you also don't build in recreation, isn't it?
Well, yeah, no, the recreation is big, but I would like to see recreation. I mean, look, you have skate parks, right? But the skate parks are not covered. So therefore, when it rains, they can't be used. And it rains a lot here. You know, so when we're talking about, when I go down into town, what I see is, do I see footfall? Sure, I see footfall. But what I see mostly is a lot of young people with nothing to do. And so what do? They're vaping, they're drinking, they're smoking marijuana. They're not really being productive. So, but they need the older generation. They need us to create things for them to do, you know, to stay productive. And what we need to do is invest in them and build up those principles and those values in them that we see also as valuable. And then, you know, so those green spaces that we're going to be building, and we're going to make the city look beautiful, but we're going to fill it with wonderful, beautiful, productive people as well. And it's those young people that we want to see take the reins. Okay.
Well, that is going to happen. There's massive plans and huge amounts of money with regards to the public realm. However, if you want to do something that will invest in recreational activity for your children, the way things are going now, the best thing you can buy them is a push bike, a bicycle, because there will be many, many, many bicycle lanes because they don't want cars anymore. So that would be something to look forward to, right?
Yeah, bike lanes are great. It's a very rainy country. So it's great, but I think it's also just limited. But really what I'm looking for is activities for young people to gain skills, for them to get them off the street, for them to stay busy. That's what I would be interested in seeing.
Okay, then they should go to school and get involved in school sports, join a team.
Well, yes, school sports are amazing. I love it. I'm an athlete as well, but it's not for everybody. And what I'd love to see is kids, you know, look, I'm in food business, right? So I would love to see Cork City sponsor with maybe grants or something. And I would love to take part in creating options for young people to go into learning how to make food, learning about food safety, and learning how to be disciplined and to show up every day, and learning these types of principles. Because right now what's happening is all they care about is making a 15-second video on Instagram and calling that like this amazing thing that they did. And that's not reality. Reality is it takes time every day. There's a process to getting better, and you need to take criticism, and they're too sensitive. And all they want to do is make these quick videos and get 1,000 likes. Mm. And that's what I would love to see them being invested in, and young people.
I wish they had an older head on their shoulders, but they don't, because that's not going to put food on the table or a roof over their heads in later life, I can tell you that.
That's what I'm saying. You know, I really, really like to get back to more of an apprenticeship-based kind of culture where we take young people. It's a lot of work to take young people on, and we do that at my business.
What do you do? You're in food. What do you do?
We have a couple of we have a couple of cafes, and we have, you know, we have a good amount of staff members, and a lot of them are young and college aged or high school age, and we try to, you know, we're interested in continual growth with our staff. So we challenge them and we get them, you know, to make amazing food and coffee for people.
Okay. It was quite a lengthy text. Let me just get back to parts of it. He says, you're a strong, confident young man, and you don't necessarily feel threatened yourself, but I have to be on high alert and prepared for imminent threat that exists due to drug use, begging, loads of youths with nowhere to go. When I'm with my kids, I'm totally on guard and aware. You said that you'd feel more secure in Brooklyn, surrounded by gang culture. Why is that?
Well, where we lived in Brooklyn, did you say why is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, because there was a large police presence there, and there was a very, very, very strong community, very active, and in trying to get create opportunities for young people. And then also there wasn't just green spaces. There were activity spaces. OK. And so there were basketball courts, there were handball courts, there were baseball fields. And guess what? They're all free and open to the public, that you don't have to pay for them. So every activity that kids can.
was free of charge,
school
yeah,
has
yeah.
to be paid for.
Yeah, that's paid yeah. for here.
So you could go to a basketball
money.
Court.
Yeah.
Where can I go with my son to play basketball? I can go to Ballincollig Regional Park to play basketball, and that's it. And there's two basketball courts there, and they're often busy. And it also rains a lot here. So what I'm looking for would be an indoor facility.
There is a basketball court in Douglas Community Park.
There sure is. There sure is. And there's one. Free. It's one, though.
Yeah. Oh, well, it is one. I know. But it is there, nonetheless.
Of course.
You look, okay, so you don't feel safe in the city, then? You're on alert.
I'm on high alert when I'm walking around because there's so many druggies walking around. There's so many beggars, and they're professional beggars too. These are young, able-bodied people who could do something if they chose to.
Yeah.
And they just choose
we got to squeeze them out and take the city back. And I don't mean that in an unchristian way. I'd be as charitable as the next fella, but not to professional chuggers.
No, not at all. But look, like to create opportunities for people. I mean, you know, one thing that I really admire in Cork and just in the country in general is the amazing masonry and the amazing stonework. Where are the apprentices? You know, we would love to see programs where if a large wall needs to be built, well, we have masons who are amazing, but they need apprentices. And those apprentices can mix the cement and they can learn.
Yeah, unfortunately, they're far from interested in blocks anymore. It's pouring
concrete. They certainly are not.
It's pouring concrete, stainless steel and glass now. That's what it is. But tell me just very finally then, you're not a huge fan of the marina market. You're saying the marina market has not helped the city. Is that right?
I don't think having large populations of people funnel out to a warehouse in order to get good food is a great way to kind of promote inner city growth. You know, if we want to see inner city growth, let's support our amazing English market, the downtown area, Oliver Plunkett Street, Patrick Street, the South Mall. Let's promote these areas and let's get people to come to the city center and, you know, not go to a warehouse that's not in the city center. I mean, because if you want to promote, you know, come and buy something to eat and sit down at a cafe, that's great. But maybe they'll go shopping for, like, you know, clothes, retail items.
Yeah, but people don't agree with you. It's phenomenal. Okay, probably to the detriment of the city, but it's phenomenally popular.
It's popular on the weekends. During the week, I would say it's just casually, you know, not that busy. I don't see a huge amount of people there during the week. I see them on the weekends, definitely. Mm-hmm. But again, I mean, whether or not they agree or not, I mean, I don't know. Everybody has an opinion and they want to believe what they want to believe. But what I see is a degrading city center. I see a lot of open storefronts. I see derelict buildings. And what I would love to see, I love artisans. I love to see small business owners thriving. But in order to do that, we have to support them with whether it's helping them out with the rates or helping them out with
the
rents.
I know that, but maybe that's why they're down the marina. Now, I know some of the businesses down there are spin-offs of existing businesses, but others could never afford, some of them that are down there, many of them, they could never afford a bricks and mortar spot in the city. They couldn't afford the rent, nor the rates, nor the overheads.
They're the artisans
that you love.
Yep. They are the artisans, yeah, but I would actually disagree with that a little bit, because when you talk about affordability, if I was to open a place up in the marina market, I'd be paying 10,000 euros a month in rent, okay? Because of the way that it's designed there is it's how you pay on how much business you produce, okay? So, but what artisans could really use is a startup grant or a startup loan. And I'm sure that they have some of those at the Enterprise Ireland. So if you go into City Hall and you go into their office, I'm sure that there is some type of program for that. Mm. But if that could be better promoted and made more widely available, young artisans who have amazing talent can do things, you know, they could do some amazing stuff.
I suppose in the scheme of all of it, if you look at the marina market and you look at shopping centres and Mahon Point and Bishopstown Court and Dunn's and Ballyvillan and other ones all over the place, Douglas, all of those draw footfall away from the city core. They do. It's just common sense. Only so many people and so much money.
Yeah.
Inevitably. All right, my man. Appreciate it. Thank you, Richard. Text 0868104106. Back after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
be involved in the conversation yourself. The Neil Prendiffle Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. I never even touched on the text from yesterday's hate speech conversations, and we'll come back to them. Interestingly, it's about Easter, you know, Friday, Good Friday, and years and years ago that would have been a very dry day. Not anymore. Alcohol and Good Friday, before they changed the law, pubs open now. I stood in St. Peter's Square in the Vatican in 2016. I could buy a bottle of beer from a vendor in the square of the Vatican, and in the Vatican shop they had beer on tap. So take that what you will. Beer on tap in a Vatican shop. More if you said they had vino. The vino was on tap in the Vatican shops. But anyway, you're talking about right-sizing. Right-sizing is kind of a funky word for the house you're in is too big for you. What are you going to do about it? There's two of you. You got four bedrooms. You mentioned the slow take-up of right-sizing. This is where people can give up their big properties and move into a like-minded community of a similar age to you a little later in life. I looked into this myself, Neil, and as a private homeowner, I would have to pay the council one-third of my property value and then pay a rent based on income. You get in return a tenancy for life. However, you can't pass this on to your family. When you die, it's gone. It makes no sense. If your property is worth 500,000, you pay 166 grand upfront, plus the solicitor cost to the council. If you're a council tenant, you would just move straight in and pay nothing. The right-sizing plan doesn't encourage those who've worked all their lives even to own their own home on a basis like this. Well, on that kind of basis, I'd be inclined to walk away from it as well, wouldn't you? The Baldy Barber was back on. He said, on reflection, I just want to mention that I have very decent customers who have always been very good to the staff and my tips for the staff. They pay with Revolut. So here, what he's saying really is that the haircut is €16, but people who tap Revolut in the Baldy Barbers usually tap 20. So the bald one then has to have €4 in change in the drawer, or in the till, to give to the staff member as the tip. He says, that's why cash will always be king. That's how he passes on the tips. Thank you for that. I was talking about red light in the old song, Billy Ocean's old song, Red Light Spells Danger. The most dangerous junction I know of people running red lights is the Bull McCabe Junction. You have three and four cars going through after the red light has changed to red. Yeah, three or four is a lot, but they know, I suppose, that they got those vital seconds to still make it through the junction. One of these days they're going to crash. One of these days they're going to hurt someone. They're going to hurt themselves as a consequence, but it's the people whose lives they're changing that I worry about. But actually the one in Douglas, the front village under the flyover, deadly. Absolutely deadly for running red lights. I was in Shannon Airport yesterday and the car park was jammed. I see plenty of sun holidays for the Easter, says Frank. Absolutely. Kids are off and people have a few bob and they want to get a bit of sun. And I say, fair play to them. Dublin Airport also warned that their car park would be full across the Easter weekend. You've got 500,000 people expected to pass through the airport this weekend. About 255,000 departing and about 240,000 arriving. That's Dublin Airport. I think I had the stats somewhere for Cork Airport. Was it something like 55, 65, 75,000 people arriving into Cork for the Easter break? Something like that. It's thriving anyway. Anyway, enough of me. Let's get a call on the air this side of midday. We'll pick it up then tomorrow, Good Friday, because we're on the air tomorrow as usual. Jim, good morning.
Hey, how's it going, boy?
Appreciate it. Lengthy email. It's always better to chat. Well, amongst other things, we were talking about the explosion in the population in the coming 5 to 10 years. And we have a mismatch when it comes to services. Is that it?
That's about it. And I suppose we have to go in reverse, go back the last 10 years. We have an increase of 1 million people in Ireland now, but the services haven't increased. Things like prisons, spaces, hospitals have got worse. You know, we haven't got enough doctor races. So all that's wrong. So we're allowing loads of people in, but the ratios are wrong. But going back to this city, and you know, none of us are happy with the conditions of the beggars and the drogies. Like, even if we got another 400 cops, it wouldn't cure the problem because there's no place. Once they arrest them, they're back out. So we really have to increase our prison base. And
but if you have more Gardaí on the beat, right? If you have more Gardaí first, then you'd have more being able to walk the beat, right? And if they were walking the beat, a lot of these messers or these professional beggars or people who shouldn't be doing what they're doing, they'd get tired of being hassled and they'd go away, wouldn't they? You don't necessarily have to arrest them.
They would not. So listen, you see them going up to court and they have 90 charges. They never got fed up. Criminals don't ever get fed up. They just get lucky. So, but like, You know, and another thing we need to do as well, it's illegal to beg in the city, and one simple
law... It's not illegal. Where'd you get that?
I always thought it was illegal to go begging in the city.
It's only illegal if you are begging with menace, begging out next to a bank entrance, begging next to an ATM machine, or blocking the entrance. No, you can beg left and right of shops, but not in front of doorways of shops. Do you know what I'm saying?
So all the cops can do so is move them on. That's it.
Yeah. Well, so what I'm saying to you, it's not illegal to beg.
So, but doesn't that make the law an arse like?
Well, I suppose they say they can't make it illegal to beg because at the time, maybe genuine people were begging.
Yeah, well, they need to change the law, and they probably need to change it twofold. One, they need to make it illegal, to beg, and secondly, they should make it illegal or put a fine if you give beggars money, and that'll get rid of your middle-class guilt, because they're only hanging around because people are giving them money. Like, if you give the beggar money or people that's annoying you, you're making it hard for the person behind you. So just stop it straight away is the first thing, but if it means that you have to introduce a fine for doing that to teach people, so be it, you know.
Don't say that. They'd love that. That's another money gaining. That's another money gathering exercise for them.
But look, it's a solution. I mean, you heard of your caller on before you were there. He'd marvellous ideas. He's the kind of guy I want to vote into the council. If we get 20 of those guys, we'd fix the city.
Richard, is it?
Yeah, we'd fix the city with 20 guys like that.
Yeah, I mean, if
he's an interest, no?
He is. Yeah, and some of the points he's making are very good ones. But he's critical of the marina market. You remember, city council were dead against the marina market. They objected to every single effort that they made in the marina market to get plan, because they opened without planning. I know that, but when they tried to retrospectively fix it, the council had to be dragged kicking and screaming to the table to allow it to remain.
And but it's fabulous. I mean, the council have their own space in the city they could use and do a kind of a marina market. Would it be as big? It nearly would. And they have that space sitting in the city that they don't use.
Yeah, maybe that's their noses out of joint that they didn't think about it. But is it impacting? I know we're kind of slightly off topic, but is everybody that's going there at the weekend, and it's like it's rammed down there. You can bring your dog and everything, no bother. Is it detracting from footfall in the city centre? Are the restaurants and cafes suffering because of it?
I wouldn't think so. I'd say that most of the people that are going there wouldn't go into town because of the hassle anyway. It's just some place to go where there's no hassle. And it draws an awful lot of young people to drive down in their cars and they don't have to pay fines or, you know, parking or anything. So there's a lot of pluses to it. And the Grove is good there too. You know, there's all good, there's fair choice. This idea of all the different shops feeding is a fantastic one. There's an England feels. So it's new to Cork. Mm. So that's, you know, it's glamorous that way. Mm. That would definitely attract people. Mm. But we have a space over the English market, right? You'd walk into the English market only and all you would see is the butcher shops and the small low roofs, right? And then you'd walk through to the cafe at the end. But up over all those shops are the exact same space again. There must be 20, 30 foot inside that space, hollow. You could do it there.
Yeah,
there's a whole space up over in the starters. Just they're talking about.
They could start with Hilsers, couldn't they? I was just thinking they could start with Hilsers, which is closed.
That's a beautiful building, like. Yeah. So there's a bell up on top of that. We don't even see it. For God's sake, it's gorgeous.
So you want more prisons? You want private prisons?
Yeah, well, the public one won't work. The government prison service won't work. It's too expensive. It's too heavily loaded. No, it works in England and it works in America. So another 2,000 prison spaces would quieten the place down. And they want the death penalty back as well. I can't understand why that's not there. Somebody murders a woman or rapes a woman and murders her. Just kill him. What the hell are you nuts for?
Steady on, lads.
If you murder and kill a woman, you deserve death. All women have the right to walk in the streets of Cork and Ireland safe.
No.
And if you have a problem with that, tell the next woman you meet.
Okay, listen, we still live in some kind of a democracy. You're entitled to say that, because it was once on the statutes. It's not any longer. It still is in many states in America and many countries around the world. However, would you not be more inclined to say, perhaps not, that what we need is mandatory sentencing and less suspended sentencing and less reports being taken into consideration? I had a bad childhood and, you know, I have addiction issues. I understand that these are issues, but a lot of the time they're almost like get out of jail cards. Do you not think that would be a healthier approach than killing somebody?
Well, but there's just different levels of crime, Neil.
Jesus said, turn the other cheek.
Yeah, listen, Jesus has gone a long time now, and the world has changed since he was around, right? I don't see him coming back to this a new law, you know, but no, listen.
Damn. I think we lost the line. I don't know why. Might pick up on the conversation in the morning. Thank you, Jim. Your thoughts are welcome on that. Incidentally, do you agree or disagree that we should reintroduce the death penalty? Have yourselves a good day. On air tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.